Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates to debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, scams, and multi-level marketing. This month, we are teaming up with IGotOut.org, a consortium of cult survivors supporting the I Got Out movement of activism and education, to help shine light on the commercial cults more commonly known as multi-level marketing. Throughout the month of November, follow along with us on social media as we share MLM statistics, cult education, survivor stories, and ways that you can join in on the movement. Visit IGotOut.org to share your MLM experience and share your I Got Out selfie using the hashtags I Got Out and I Got Out of an MLM on social media. Freedom of thought is a universal human right. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. A little bit of housekeeping before we jump into the episode. I want to let you know that today we are going to be talking about Heaven's Gate, which was a cult throughout the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, and unfortunately ended in the late 90s with a mass suicide. So the trigger warning here today is that we're going to be talking about a mass suicide, and there are details about it, and it is a pretty tragic story. So I just wanted to give you the heads up. There are also some really great educational links in the show notes if you don't know about Heaven's Gate, or this is the first time that you're hearing about it. And if you're interested or curious and you want to learn more, there's definitely more information in the show notes for you if you're interested. I also want to say thank you so much to the great response to the Amway Tools Cult episode. It was one of my favorites too. I love the history of MLM and learning about these shady businesses and all the nefarious deeds that they are doing behind the scenes. I can't wait to have Sean back to tell us some more MLM history. I also want to remind you that if you have a cult story you would like to share, that you can go ahead and email or send a voice message or submit those at outofmlm.info. All of those links are also in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. Today is a bonus episode. I know we like to talk about MLMs, and that's usually what we talk about, but we also like to talk about cults. And whenever I get the chance to talk to somebody who was either in one or very close to somebody, I jump at the chance because I think it's a really great educational and just also kind of entertaining to see how things played out. So I would love to welcome to the show my friend Leslie Fear. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Roberta. How are you?
So good. I met Leslie a while back. I was on her podcast. We talked obviously about LuLaRoe and being in a cult. A really great podcast. You guys should definitely check it out.
I host a podcast called Because I Want to Know. It's a paranormal true crime podcast. I cover anything between near-death experiencers, ex-cult members, psychic mediums. I also talk to people that have been in true crime stories, who have those two kinds of things going on in their lives. And I tell you, I talk to anybody and everybody who interests me. And it doesn't have to be true crime or paranormal. It can be, I interviewed a guy who was a hot air balloon pilot. I'm like, how do you steer the damn thing?
Yeah.
So he's like, I'll be on your podcast. It's just a plethora, and you can cherry pick the episodes. If you don't want to hear about paranormal, you can hear about a bomb hunter that just got back from Iraq, or you can hear about a man who preps people for prison. He went to prison and was scared to death, got out, started prepping people for it. It's just amazing the people I get to talk to.
And I love the whole concept of Because I Want to Know.
Yeah.
And the name of your podcast, obviously, because I think there are times where there's this morbid curiosity of things.
You just want to know.
Yeah. And it's not because you're like weird or you're like, want to offend anybody or make fun of anybody. You're just really genuinely curious.
I want to know what a mortician does all day.
Yeah.
And I found out.
Yeah. You and I have been trying to connect, and I live the craziest life. So today, for this special bonus episode, we are going to be talking about a cult that actually is local and dear to my heart because of that case. This happened in 1997 here in San Diego, and we are going to talk about the Heaven's Gate cult.
Wow.
So, yeah. Leslie, please
Explain why this cult is near and dear to you and what your connection to it is.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to talk about Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles. Bonnie Nettles and Marshall Applewhite started the cult Heaven's Gate. They would go to colleges and put out pamphlets and try to get members to come in. And we probably should go back to his beginning, but I'll tell you right now, my grandmother was one of the first members, Lorraine Wilbur. That's on my mother's side. My mother was never involved, but her sister and her other sister were involved. So I know it's insane.
It is.
So it was Lorraine's two other daughters, Sharon Walsh and Judy Rowland. Now, Judy Rowland was my mother's half-sister. All of these women, and even my mom to a certain degree, but my mom was never involved in the cult, they would leave their kids. It was just what they did. You would just leave. Like your grandmother, I never met her until she just showed up at my high school graduation. And I'm like, who is this woman? And my mom's like, oh, well, that's your grandmother. And I'm like, okay, great. Meet her. She goes away for a few years. Then she comes back right after the group commits suicide and comes to see me right after I have my son. And I don't even know who this. I had no idea any of this was going on, by the way. My mom was like, hey, your aunt was just found after committed suicide. And don't talk to People Magazine. Don't talk. What is going on?
What an interesting phone call to receive, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't talk to People Magazine when they call. You're like, what is happening?
I'm like, what are you talking? Because they're trying to get a hold of her. Anyway, for the longest time, she forbade us to talk about it. But so that's kind of the preface. But let me tell you about Marshall Applewhite. He was born in 1931 to a Presbyterian pastor. So kind of get that in your head. Because when he grew up, he was always in theater. He was a great singer. Dude could sing. Okay. Was even in some musicals when he got a little older with Joan Van Ark. Do you remember her from Knott's Landing?
What? Really?
Yeah. He was even in a musical. I think Annie, Get Your Gun with her. Even interviewed her and she was like, he was fantastic. And she had nothing but good things to say. And that was then. But as time went on, and we're talking 50s, 60s, early 70s, especially though when it was earlier on, you don't go to your father, who's a Presbyterian pastor, and say, Dad, guess what? I'm gay. You know?
Yeah. Definitely.
So his dad completely disowned him. Completely. But I think that was the beginning of his undoing. I think that was the beginning of his unraveling. And every time you hear him talk about his father, he'll tear up in film. Like you'll see him, his breath will hitch. I mean, when he talks about his dad. Because it was so hurtful to him, I'm sure. And back then, it's way more acceptable now. If you're gay, you're gay. Get over it. But back then, it just wasn't acceptable. And he was not going to be associated with the child that was gay.
Wow,
so that was the beginning of that. Because it's not necessarily you want to go in and become a cult member. That's not, let's do that. No, you don't. Nobody goes in doing that or thinking that way. But I do think that people go in going, hey, I'm not accepted here. These people really love me. They want me to come in their group. I like what they have to say. They make me feel good. I'm going to go in and see what it's all about. And I think the desperation for other people that were maybe searching for spirituality in the 60s and 70s, it was all about free love and psychedelics. And we're seeing all these cool things and mushrooms are coming out of the ground and they're purple. And, you know, I mean, all the things. So people were trying to find spirituality. I know that was going on with my family members. So Lorraine was one of the first members with Bonnie and Applewhite, T and Doe.
This is the 29th of September, 1996. I'm Doe. And Doe probably doesn't mean anything to many of you. To those that have heard of Doe, I might relate Doe to Tien Doe of UFO 2 or of a UFO cult that made some splash in the news 1975.
And you know where they got the Tien Doe, right?
Sound of Music, right?
The Sound of Music. Yeah. That was Bonnie Nettles' favorite film. And when they got together, they would go to these colleges. Somehow it got in the hands of my grandmother. And her daughter, Sharon, which is my mother's full sister, they kind of got in the group and they were searching for whatever they were searching for, some kind of religious freedom, spirituality. You know, we've never been, and even in my family, we've never been religious. We've been spiritual, but not really religious. And that's kind of just how they were too. So everybody's searching for everything.
Some of you have heard some efforts that we have had to try to share a little bit of what we have learned with the public periodically between 1975 and now. We put out a statement called 88 Update in 1988, and we did a little videotape a little while after that. I think it was 92.
These people seem to know what they're doing. And, you know, there's a certain aspect in our family, I'm sure, that, hey, we're open to, okay, there's aliens. Cool. All right. There's a ship waiting for us, taking us away to another level. All right. I'm listening to this. Okay.
Well, you know, also at the same time, like, so this is the early 70s. So there's a lot of like new ageism. There's a lot of that spiritualism. There's a lot of sci-fi that is coming into popular culture. It's something that people don't know. They don't understand. It's new. And I mean, those are also like some of the best ingredients for creating something like this. A movement is taking those new popular ideas and sort of making a community out of it. And that's essentially what it started off as.
Now, today is quite a different urgency. It's urgent to me. It's urgent to the students that sit before me. Our reason for speaking to you is because we feel urgently to warn you of what we are about to say.
Right. And Bonnie was really the driving force with this, because when he went into the hospital for something, I can't remember what Applewhite went in for. It was something. And she was his nurse. That's how they met. I think he kind of confided in her. And I think she kind of had a crush on him, even though that would never have happened with him. They got really close. And he was like, you know, I've never been accepted by father. She goes, you know what? You've just never been around me. I will take care of you. I think you are the next level. She was all into the UFO stuff. She was all into ufology, all those things that made him go, wait a minute, somebody accepts me? My father wouldn't. You love me and you don't hardly know me? Okay, well, let me tag along with you for a while. And so she kind of indoctrinated him in her thoughts. And she said, you really are the second coming of Christ. We think you are. That's what we think you are. We're going to go with that. Yeah.
Those and are really powerful words to say to somebody who's floundering and vulnerable and looking for acceptance.
Yeah.
But oh, not only do we want to be your friend, but we think you're God too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, but that religious background, massive indoctrination of religion. And I'm not picking on religion. I'm just saying that was his background. That's all he knew. And when your father or your mom or whoever, both of them, completely disown you, you are dying for someone to accept you. Because he'd already been kicked out of a music school. He was one of the music professors there. He was kicked out because he had a relationship with one of the members. So he got kicked. So it's a constant being shoved away from every possible aspect of his happiness, whether it's in theater, whether it's his family, whether it's whomever, friends, you know, because nobody talked about it back then in the 60s. Nobody, you couldn't openly be that way. You just couldn't do that. And she accepted him. She said, listen, come with me. I know the answers. I got you. So he's like, okay, I'm coming. And that's what he did. And I don't think a lot of people know that Bonnie Nettles was the one that kind of started this whole thing with him.
Yeah, I've always seen him as sort of the figurehead, probably because he was the one that sort of outlasted. Bonnie is a really big part of this.
Yeah, she's the start of the UFO and the Star Trek, and she loved all those things. And he was just like, okay, I'm accepted. I'll agree to all this. And so they went into these colleges and started recruiting people, and they had like almost 200 members. They had a ton of people thinking, okay, they've got great things to say, and maybe there is a UFO ship we're waiting for. And maybe we are ascending to another dimension. And maybe we should just go on and just become one with God. And you know what? Let's do that. And some people got up and left. Some people were like, you know, hey, just like we said, they were searching for some kind of spiritual awakening or some kind of spiritual, they were getting fulfilled in their normal life. And they followed them. So when they were in, you know, in all these different places, they moved around a lot because they needed more money every time. It's a typical cult thing. They had like an investor. They had like a rancher. They had a guy that gave all of his inheritance. I mean, it was just all this money. So they were able to get a lot of money. Not toward the end, they got even more money. But like at the beginning, they were able to go and move around and recruit people. And the more people they got, the more money they got.
Absolutely. But then it got, you're talking about moving around, recruiting and getting money. I mean, I feel like that's every single MLM scam and cult out there, right? Like that's the first red flag that there's a massive group of people that are trying to convince you of how great it would be if you joined them.
Well, and we love you. And we want you to be a part of this and we accept you. And I know you're desperate. You want people to love you. And you know what? We will love you. You don't need to be friends with anybody else but us.
Right. And we see in you what no one else can see.
That's exactly what happened. And that is a similarity that's kind of scary if you think about it.
Yeah. Wow.
That's scary. Okay.
All right. So the ultimate mega hun, Bonnie Nettles, is touring the country, recruiting children from college campuses into UFOlogy cult.
Right. And I think the youngest was 16 at one point. But so they decide when they start getting a pretty good amount, they start really trying to act like as one, like a crew, like they cut their hair like monks and they abstain from sex. And the men even decided at one point to get castrated. Most of them did. And So, and it was just, because they wanted to be, they thought the purer you are, the closer to God you are. And of course he's the God, or at least the standing one right there. So we all need to be pure. And they had people watching them. You had you and your partner, and they would make you accountable. And if some man, and this is getting kind of weird, some man had a sexual dream, he would have to report it, clean it up, and then he would have to go attest for his sins. Yeah.
In his dream?
In his dreams. That should not be happening. Yeah.
Oh, so God, I could not imagine being punished for the dream that I had and then voluntarily told somebody about. Oh my God.
It's like, but because I don't know how, why they would think that they couldn't just not say anything.
I would just be like, I didn't dream about anything, actually. It was a very dreamless slumber. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about. What's going on? So, but they had accountable. And the thing is, they were so indoctrinated and so trained and so wanting to people pleaser, trying to get people to love them and trying to get their community to just trust and love them. All of them were like that. And in the case with both of my aunts, so my grandmother, after about 5 years left, she was getting a little older, she decided to leave the group. Okay. But she would stay in touch with them and she would talk to Applewhite. And I think Applewhite came to her house a couple times, probably to get money. So Sharon left too later. And Sharon even went against the cult to try to talk badly about them. And that was good. She tried to say, don't do this. This is a bad thing. And she ended up dying of breast cancer years later. And so they weren't able to interview her, but she was one of the few that did try to say, this is not good. Don't do this. But Judy went to go see her mother at one point. They had like gold bars. You know those old gold bars? Like they had a ton of gold bars and they were like going to give this to Apple. What's going on? So it's like they would use cash. They would use savings. They would use gold bars, coins, everything they could to get their hands on money, right? Everything they could to keep it going.
So I have a question. Okay, so it's Sharon Morgan, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm doing some Googling.
She was Wash at one point, but now.
Right. Yeah. So their first follower, Sharon Morgan, is your aunt.
Is my full aunt.
Your full aunt. And it says in May of 1974, she abandoned her children to join Tea and Joe. A month later, she decided to go back to her family. And during this time, Bonnie and Marshall are arrested because they were using her credit cards.
Well, and he got arrested a couple times because he was like, he took a rental car and said it was divinely assigned to him. So he stole a rental car too. I mean, they were just like,
well, the charges were later dropped because your aunt was like, gave them my cards to use.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I know. And later she says, oh, this isn't good and all the things. But at the time, there are things that I am finding out as I go, because here's the deal. My mom wasn't involved And when it all happened, my mom forbade us to talk about it. This is the first time I've ever talked about any of this, ever, except for one other podcast, and that was on my podcast. And I interviewed Judy's daughter, Cindy, who was 8 when she left her daughter, and her brother was 6. And she did not talk to the media. They wanted to talk to her so badly, and she wouldn't for years. And finally, I was able, because I didn't even know her very well. I didn't know any of these people very well. I knew them, met them a few times. None of us were close. The moms always left. It was just a disaster.
I got my newest Quince order in the mail. Want to join in on the fun? Visit quince.com/MLM for free shipping and 365-day returns. Y'all know I am a sucker for fashion in the worst way. I think most of you who listen know that. And from the second that I saw Quince's $50 Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater, I knew that I needed one. I've never owned cashmere because it's always felt just out of reach. But it's spring, so we're cleaning out the old to make room for the new, and I'm upgrading my wardrobe with a new, super soft, lightweight, classic cashmere sweater. It is perfect for just about any time of the year and occasion. And I paired mine with some skinny jeans, and I wore it to all of the podcast industry parties at Evolutions this past week. It is a luxury essential at an unbeatable price. Truly, you are getting 70% off the luxury brands on 100% grade A Mongolian cashmere. Unreal. Quince's quality cashmere is incredibly long-lasting, it's 3 times as warm as wool, and it's sourced sustainably and ethically from goats in Inner Mongolia, and then it's ethically produced in China. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. And coming from my past, I absolutely love to hear that. There's a reason that this sweater has a 4.9 star rating with over 11,000 reviews. It comes in 21 colors, 5 sizes, and it won't break the bank or your heart. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/MLM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/MLM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/MLM. I've got this whole eating fancy while at home thing on lock with Cook Unity, and you can join me by visiting cookunity.com or entering code MLM before checkout for 50% off your first week. I live in sort of a rural area east of San Diego, and so I don't really get to step out of my culinary comfort zone as often as I'd like to. And if you're a foodie too, you know how expensive exploring the local food scene can get and how hard it can be to find the time and the energy to venture out of your neighborhood. I love our small town spots, but it can get boring pretty fast. I've tried a lot of food services and meal kits, and by far, Cook Unity is my favorite. While others can be labor-intensive or food-restrictive, Cook Unity left me feeling satisfied, satiated, and smiling. You guys know how much of a workaholic I am. You listen every week. Cook Unity got me excited to take a break and enjoy a delicious hot lunch from the comfort of my own home without leaving. And it was less expensive than a trip through the drive-thru. The meals were delicious, easy to reheat, and every single one of them was a hit that I would reorder. I love the variety, the flavors, and the fact that we can support local chefs. The rustic-style French beef ragu was so delicious. I paired it with some leftover garlic bread that I had from dinner the night before, and I practically licked the plate clean. If you'd like to support the show and join me in experiencing chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door, go to cookunity.com/MLM or enter code MLM before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code MLM or going to cookunity.com/MLM.
So I'm finding out some of this stuff at the time in 97 when everyone else is finding out on the news. And I'm like, what is going on with the people that are in my family? How are you?
It's totally wild. But I mean, she's the OG.
Yeah.
She's their first follower. Where did Sharon meet them? At college, in a college setting somewhere?
You know, and that's what I don't know. And that's what Cindy and I were trying to piece timelines together, because she didn't know Sharon's part of the family. She didn't really know my mother very well. She knew Lorraine, who was the mother of Sharon and Judy. So we don't know if it was on a college campus or if it was something else. They would put pamphlets out everywhere, and some people would find him or not or whatever. I don't know where every place was that they put pamphlets out. Somehow she found them. And Sharon, she wasn't in a bad marriage. I don't think she was in a bad marriage, but I know Judy had a very narcissistic husband, and she was very not happy in her marriage, like really not happy. I think that was the beginning of her downfall. And I was talking to Paranormal Karen. I don't know if you know who that is. That's another podcast. And she and I were talking about this. And she said, you know, I think it's funny. And this is a good point. She goes, you know how that 70s show, Ashton Kutcher gets back with what's her face, right?
Jackie.
And one of the guys that he's friends with, can't think of the name, Hyde or something, said, why are you back with her? And he goes, because I don't have to think.
Right.
Everything was so regimented. Every minute of their day, 6 minute showers, two or three to a bed, but you weren't getting much sleep, hence the cult. They would constantly have things to do. There was never downtime and not much sleep. You couldn't have feelings for anyone else. It was such an indoctrinative kind of way of looking at it. It's like Stockholm syndrome. It really is. And once they're so into this and they're accepting that they can keep a journal, and Cindy actually got a hold of one of her mom's journals, and she said it was so boring to read, but that was her life. She didn't want any responsibility. She wanted every minute of her life planned out. And it was just so strange to her. And yet it made her understand even more, but still not understand other aspects. Because there was a time they let all of them come home for a little while to say goodbye. And that's when I met Judy. Yeah.
Wow. So like, throughout the 70s and 80s, they're just sort of traipsing across the country, doing these big spiritual chats and like recruiting up to 20 to 30 people per event.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they need the money. Some people would get up and walk out like, okay, you're talking about UFOs. You're talking about he is the Christ. And for years, I think they got tired after a while. Because they kept thinking a spaceship was coming for them. They wanted the next level. They were the vehicles and they wanted the next level. They were convinced a spaceship was coming for them. Hence why Hale Bopp was the actual thing they decided to, that was their cue. Oh, well, we got to do this. And at one point there was conspiracy theory, like on the news or something. It looks like there's a UFO behind Hale Bopp. And when they heard that, that was it.
Okay. All right. They were like, wait a second. That's our ride.
That's Bonnie. She came back to get us.
Right. So I do remember this. I'm from San Diego, born and raised. Mm-hmm. It was 1997. I was 16 years old in high school. Mm-hmm. I remember this on the news. It was like the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Pictures of the bunks with the shrouds and the Nikes.
Yeah. You know why they got the Nikes? Well, they all dress the same, but
right.
They literally got a good deal on them.
It was like the best deal they could get. So they got those ones. Yeah. And you can't buy those anymore. They obviously Nike took them off the market.
Oh yeah.
I did see a pair on eBay for an astronomical amount.
Yeah.
You can no longer get it anymore. I remember it being on the news. It happened in the richest, fanciest area.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into this, but it was one of the first like forays to me in like, oh, this stuff actually does happen. Mm-hmm. And not just in movies or like hearing old stories about like Jonestown or like the Manson massacres and the family and all of that. But like, this was something that was not only happening while I was alive, but in my hometown too.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's still the biggest mass suicide in US history. And we just had the 25th anniversary. That's why. Yeah. It was coming up and Cindy was like, they're starting to try to talk to me again. And I was like, let's just do my podcast and let's just do that. We'll piece what we know together, because we knew things that a lot of the media didn't know and those kinds of things. So yeah.
Let's talk about the Heaven's Gate cult coming into San Diego and settling in Rancho Santa Fe. So for anybody that's never been to San Diego, Rancho Santa Fe is in Northern San Diego. Mm-hmm. It is very nice. It is the most expensive zip code in San Diego. It is like 98% white, very, very, very ritzy. The median income is $200,000 a year. And the houses there are in friggin' sane. So they're mega mansions, mm-hmm. a lot of like big sports and television personalities have their houses, and politicians as well have their houses here. It's like if La Jolla was just sort of more inland, it's on the other side of the freeway. And so you have like the estuaries and that sort of stuff versus the beach, but it's very expensive. So I just wanted to let you guys know sort of the area of town that they decided to rent a mansion in when the cult came into town.
Yeah. Years and years would go by and they'd pick up a few here and pick up a few there. And they went to the internet because they at one point they had to start working after years and years of not working because they ran out of money and they were having to try to blend in with people. And after years and years of being celibate and seeing all these people in normal clothes and men or women, you know, you see what you haven't seen in so long. It was starting to really wear on them. So they got lucky and found someone who had a trust fund and gave all of his trust fund. And they found another person that had he was a rancher and he was very successful. So he gave all his money. So that's why they found the house and ranch of Santa Fe.
You talk about them having to get jobs. They were getting some, you know, obviously people's money, like the trust fund and the ranch and things like that. And you also mentioned the internet. So in 97, the internet was relatively new still. It'd only been around publicly for a few years. They definitely used the internet to their advantage and started a business to fund their cult, actually.
That's right.
We even have, if you wanted to learn, look, the time I'm sitting with you is a tiny little fragment of time. I couldn't tell you the things I know if we sat for days and days and days. I couldn't tell you the things I know. But if you want to know more about us, if you can believe what I'm telling you and you want to know more about it, you can go to Heaven's Gate and the internet. You can pull down all kinds of stuff that we have written, things that we have done, things about our history. We even have a book that's available to you I'm not going to spend time now trying to sell you some book, but there is a book available that you can find on Heaven's Gate website.
And because they weren't doing well out in the world working, because it was just so distracting and they didn't, you know, they were like living like monks. There was a couple guys, people that were really good with IT and good with computers. And they said, hey, let's just offer some computer service to everyone. And that's where they got the rest of their money. Once they decided, okay, we can make a business out of this. Plus we have this new money coming in. This is a good flow. We'll do this for a while. I actually don't think they were in that house a long time. I don't think they were there more than maybe a year or two. Maybe. I don't think they were there long.
It says right here in October, the group began renting a large home, which they called the monastery. So this was in October of 1996 that they rented the house. But they started renting the house.
Okay. So it was only a year and a half, maybe something like that. I knew it wasn't very long they were there.
And then it says on March 19th through the 20th of 1997, that's when he taped himself his Doe's final exit video where he was speaking about the mass suicide.
Then I can be your shepherd. My older member can be your senior shepherd. You can follow us, but you cannot stay here and follow us. You would have to follow quickly by also leaving this world before the conclusion of our leaving this atmosphere in preparation for its recycling. That would have to happen quickly. And
he said that, yeah, that the mass suicide was the only way to evacuate the Earth, because the Hale-Bopp comet, which hadn't been around for however many long. That's the thing that I remember the most, because my dad was really into that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me, because we had a telescope, he's like, the Hale-Bopp comet with the tail, and we're going to be able to see it.
It was a big deal.
And so I remember that, you know, it's like when a few years ago when it was like, there's going to be a solar eclipse and you'll only be able to see it through this little, you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. So that's sort of how everybody was feeling about Hale-Bopp.
Right.
And I just remember Hale-Bopp being like a comet that was going to have a tail flying through the sky and that we were going to be able to see it because it was going to finally be close enough to Earth to actually see it. But these people heard that looked like there was something attached to it, assumed
that. Yeah.
That it was their former leader who had died from cancer, even though part of their whole thing was that you'll never die, et cetera, et cetera. When she died, it was a big cognitive dissonance moment for them, I think, when she died. So hearing this, that she's coming back and we can join her. And obviously it worked because she's on the comet. This is the way that we can join her. And so the plan was to commit a mass suicide as Hale Bopp passed over and that their souls would essentially float up and meet the comet and the spaceship.
Because the body never dies.
And they would be taken to their next place.
Now, this is not to say that we know that there is a guarantee that we will all together go on board a craft in order to leave before the spading under occurs. We will go definitely on board a craft to leave when the spading occurs. You can say, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is we don't know if we're going to take these flesh bodies on board that craft or if we'll leave these flesh bodies behind. We don't believe that our Father's kingdom has much need for these flesh bodies, but it's possible that a spacecraft will come down and we'll walk.
Yeah, and how they did it, they would take a combination of phenobarbital and vodka and mix it with applesauce pudding or whatever. I think some of them even just drink Kool-Aid. That's where you get to drink the Kool-Aid. Of course, that was from Jonestown too, but they didn't use Kool-Aid. They used Flavor Aid. So,
yeah.
And they did it in increments. Like they would do like six at a time or nine at a time. And then it finally got to the last two and the last two took care of Marshall Applewhite. They took care of him. He was found in the master bedroom with pillows under his knees and just all sprawled out like Christ. Then those two took their own lives and they would put plastic, they even put plastic bags over their heads to make sure that the combination drugs. Yes. And then the girls did it themselves. And there was even a gun found in one of the people's purse. And I just in case, I think that was, I don't know if that was how she felt, but we wonder if that's why she had a gun.
Well, yeah. Wow. You really never know, right? Like what are these people thinking? So when the bodies were found, there were 39 victims. They were all dressed identical in black shirts and sweatpants. And they were all wearing those brand new black and white Nike Decades. And every single person, I think this is very strange. Every single person had $5.75 in their pocket.
Just crazy. Where did you get that number? I know quarters were for phones and chapstick and some of their glasses were next to them in case they got up and started to read or you took those to an afterlife. I don't know.
So it says that according to former members, that this was a standard for members when they would leave the home for their jobs. And it was a humorous way to tell them that they had left the planet permanently. So it was their own inside joke.
Okay.
When they left each day to go to work, they would take $5.75 like for lunch or anything they would need. And so this was their whole inside joke that everybody was taking $5.75 with them to the next place.
Okay.
So that they would have that.
It makes sense. Like,
I mean, it's those little things, these little idiosyncratic things that it's just so strange. Like, where were they in their mind's eye that like, they were like, we need to get $5. We need 39 $5 bills.
When the first group left, you know, and then you give them all their medicine or lethal dosages and they're watching their friends die. Where's that cognitive dissonance? Where's that little voice in your head going, this is not good. I probably should take off running, but none of them did except, well, there's two that left. And I think one decided to leave right before, but the other one, Applewhite wanted him to tell the world about their story. And I think he's the one that called and gave the tip about everyone being gone in the house, or they may not have been discovered for months until somebody finally said, okay, there's something coming. There's a stench coming from the house. And they were already, you know, it was 3 days before I think they actually went to the, because it took 3 days for them to all commit suicide. So I think on that third or fourth day, probably on the third day when everyone for sure was gone, the guy called the cops and they came. But, you know, another thing I wanted to talk about too, when I was interviewing my, because, you know, the feeling that she had and the issue she had with her mother, not only leaving her when she was in first grade and watching her pack up the car and not understanding why her mom was leaving and then coming back home because they walked to school back then, I guess, you know, Gen X people, we just did whatever. If you walk to school, it's 4 blocks away. You're good. Bye. Take your brother. You know how that was. And when they came home, her dad was home. He usually wasn't home by that time. And he was upset and crying. And she left a note and the father understood what was going on, but she didn't tell anybody but their neighbor. So the neighbor knew, never told anyone. And I don't think she told the neighbor until like right before she did it, but still the neighbor could have given him a heads up. That didn't happen. Also, the fact that Judy came back for a little while to say goodbye. And for like 5 years, she stayed out of the group. And she came back to her husband, and her husband really loved her a lot, was hoping and praying she'd come back, and she did. But they couldn't make it work because she said, Leslie, it was just so bad. She was such a different person, so indoctrinated. She couldn't make it work with him. So he said, okay, we got to get a divorce. So that happened. Then she goes off to Texas and marries a cowboy. Not even kidding. And I think that's when I met her, when she was in Texas. And then that didn't work out. And guess what? She went back to the group, which a lot of people did after 5 years. But the thing is, and I said, well, Cindy, did you ever ask your mom why she left? And she goes, I didn't. And I don't know why. She goes, but I think I kind of know. If I asked her, I thought maybe she'd do it again. So I didn't want her to do it again, because that little girl inside me didn't want my mom to leave me. And Cindy's never had children. And she's my age. She's 55. I said, why did you not? You know, I'm just curious. And she said, I didn't want to be that mom that left her kids, because it runs in our family. I have two kids, but it's fine. But the thought and that, you know, but the thing is, this does not just happen and affect, just like in the kinds of corporate cults you talk about, this does not just affect the person that does it. It affects everyone, obviously. But can you imagine the kids? When it all came out, her father and her brother did talk to the media about it. And did a lot of, like, I think they talked to Dateline and a couple, I don't remember all the people, but like a few of them. And her brother couldn't handle it. And he ended up committing suicide too. So it's a rough thing for a family. And she goes, I went, when my mom left, I went so opposite of what I was. I became very religious. Then I became not religious. Then I became just wild. And this is right after she left that second time. It was just, she goes, I became nothing I recognized, and I had to bring myself back. And it's almost like I had to heal that little girl inside me. And that's why she goes, that's why I never had kids. And she goes, and I love kids, but I just had to heal myself. And she's wonderfully happy, a Reiki master now, massage therapist. She's fantastic, has a wonderful life, beautiful husband, off wonderful. So she couldn't be happier, but was robbed of a childhood. And so was her brother.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah. So I looked it up because I was curious about how they were found. So essentially what they did was they created packages and sent them to the media.
Yes.
And so it was like people in the media that got these packages.
And the tapes.
And this one guy's name is Rio D'Angelo.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that called.
Yeah. So he received the package on March 25th. And it contained two VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. One was Doe's final exit, and the other was a farewell message to the group. It contained a letter that said, we have exited our vehicles just as we entered them. So this guy told his boss about it, and they went down from Los Angeles to San Diego, and they found an open door and walked into the mansion, and he used a video recorder. So he walked in and recorded the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there is footage of that. And it's so chilling. Wild to receive a package. Like, 'cause this stuff happens in movies. This stuff happens in stories. This doesn't happen in real life. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously it does, but you know, like, to just receive a mysterious package. And when you open it up, it's tapes from people that are like, if you're listening to this, I'm already gone. Like, it's so chilling and sinister and creepy and it's just wild.
It is.
That anybody was at a place in their life and in their mind where they were like, this is the best option.
Try to just put it as briefly as I can put it and as clearly as I can put it. This planet is about to be recycled, refurbished, started over. That doesn't mean it's going to be destroyed. It doesn't mean it's the end of the world. But it does mean that it's going to be recycled, refurbished. Now, you can say, well, who are you to say that? And I'll tell you who I am. As to whether or not you believe who I am or not is up to you. And whether or not you believe that it's going to be recycled or refurbished is up to you. Now, the purpose of this tape is to warn you that that is about to happen.
ever been the victim of identity theft or been harassed and scammed by annoying spam and robocalls, and you're wondering, how do they even get my information? This is why privacy matters, because our personal information is everywhere on the internet, making us easy targets. The volume of personal data available online has tripled between 2019 and 2023. The good news is that you can protect your data with DeleteMe, a subscription service that removes your personal info from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process, helps prevent potential identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. To put it simply, DeleteMe does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal info off the web. After a quick and easy sign up, you input as much information as you can remember into the prompts, and DeleteMe immediately goes to work scrubbing all of your personal information from data broker platforms, so your personal and private information is no longer theirs to profit from. DeleteMe then sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing you what they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I was floored. Trust me, I forgot a ton of past home addresses, and they still came up on my report. Old email addresses I didn't remember, past phone numbers from 20 years ago. It was wild. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/MLM.
Yeah. No, I know. And the thing is, at the beginning, when they all started, there was a bunch of core people that always stayed. Even if they left, they all came back. And you always wonder, what was in your head when you did that? Why were you doing that? What was the driving force? And I just believe at the beginning, they wanted to be accepted just like Applewhite. And then after that, the lifestyle, the I don't have to think, the I don't want the responsibility. I know one woman went through postpartum depression, and she and her husband joined toward the very end. And she was one of the ones that committed suicide as well. And she just was literally going through postpartum depression, but they accepted her and they made her a leader and they made her feel important. And they made her feel like, okay, you've got control. I know you just had your third baby and you probably feel a little out of control right now. They didn't do that for her. They indoctrinated her so quickly, and her husband got out, and then now he's a single dad. Wow. At the time. Yeah. It's just, and you know, and people say, oh, I would never let that happen to me. And I wouldn't either. But when you were at your lowest, or when you were at your most confused time, especially in these times, I watched the Diane Sawyer 2020 episode, I think last March when she aired it, because it's 25th anniversary this year.
So Rio D'Angelo, to go back to this really quick, he mm-hmm, gets this package. Mm-hmm. He ends up making an anonymous 911 call tip, yes, to the San Diego County Sheriff. And it goes like this. He says, yes, I need to report an anonymous tip. Who do I talk mm-hmm. to? And the mm-hmm. sheriff says, okay, what is this regarding? And he says, this is regarding a mass suicide, and I can give you the address. And that was at 3:15 p.m. on March 26, 1997. Mm-hmm. The single deputy who responded entered through a side door, saw 10 bodies, and was overcome by the pungent odor. The bodies were already decomposing mm-hmm. in the hot California spring. So, God, I can't even imagine. Yeah. They found, after they searched the whole house, they found no one alive. And then they left the house until they could get a search warrant. But at the end, they did find all 39 bodies, and they were ultimately cremated as well.
Right. I actually think Cindy's father has Judy's ashes, I believe. And I got to tell you, Lorraine, who was also one of the first members with Sharon, my mom went to go visit her, and Cindy happened to be with her at her house in Missouri. Lorraine said, you know, I'm so proud of Judy. I'm so proud of, you know, her doing what she did. She was doing it for the better of humanity, showing people what really happened. She was still thinking, this is good. And Cindy said, why would you say that to a daughter, the only daughter you have living? What about the daughter you have living? And she goes, you know, she didn't want to be a part of it. I'm not proud of her like that.
Wow.
And that's how her mother was. She was very direct. She wasn't, you know, my mom had nothing to do with it, thank God. And she, like I said, the sisters weren't that close. They knew each other. They kind of grew up together. But like, Lorraine would take Sharon and my mom to Lorraine's sister and leave her for a year and go back and get them. just drop them off. So if pillar to post children, they don't have any sense of, hey, let's keep the family together. Nobody had that core of what about our cousins and what about our siblings? None of that. So they were okay with just leaving, just cutting people off. And that's what Cindy didn't want to happen. So she was like, how can you say this to your daughter? How could you be proud of a daughter who committed suicide in a weirdo UFO cult? How can you be proud of that? And she didn't want to, she thought that was great. My mom wasn't part of it. So, you know, she wasn't like them. She wasn't one of them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to hear that.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it broke my mom's heart. And Cindy said, you know, the fact that I had my mom once, she left, she came back, I had her again, and she left me again.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's what screwed her up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Abandonment. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So after, you know, the news broke of these 39 deaths, mm-hmm. there were a couple other deaths. There was a copycat death of a 58-year-old man who left a note on March 27th saying, I'm going on the spaceship with Hale Bopp to be with those who have gone before me.
Yeah.
And he was not connected to the Heaven's Gate cult at all. And then at least three former members of Heaven's Gate committed suicide in the months after.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just so sad, right?
And
just,
honestly, they
wanted
to
be with everybody. Yeah. Absolutely. It's murder.
You know, I think he committed suicide and he basically murdered all of the people that followed him.
Yeah. It's murder by coercion. Absolutely.
It is. Absolutely.
If a girl can convince her boyfriend to kill himself over the phone and be convicted of murder by coercion, I feel that Marshall Applewhite could be convicted of the 38 murders plus the four that came after it as well as a result.
Right.
Absolutely murder. And it even says in here that Yanya, who is amazing, she's going to come on the show. She's a cult expert as well and a sociologist. She also has referred to the Hale Bopp mass suicide as a murder as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, that's how I believe it. Yeah. Yeah. It's just because, you know, I don't have any other nicer words to say, but besides just he murdered those people and he just committed suicide. So he did it very cowardly. And it's all because he had an issue with his own father and he didn't feel accepted. So he grew this group into some kind of ridiculously insane way and had to make them feel the way he felt, or, you know, because he couldn't have sex with people. That was a sin. He couldn't do. So he made them all do the same thing he couldn't do.
Right.
He made them do the same thing that he couldn't do. And they all said, okay, but it didn't happen right away. But by the time he was done, they all did the same thing.
I mean, it's so sad, right? And here's another thing in their belief system. They were against suicide. The cult themselves were against the act of suicide, yet through coercion, mm-hmm. brainwashing, control, Applewhite effectively convinced these people that killing themselves wouldn't be suicide.
Right.
Because they were not actually killing their souls. They were just leaving their human vehicles behind.
Right. Right. Because Bonnie Nettles, I don't think she ever would have agreed to this from what I know about her. So the fact that, you know, in a cult, you got to make up new rules,
right?
Everything's a secret. Let's make up some new rules. And so that's what he did. That's basically what he did.
And, you know, you wonder, was it a suicide because he realized he was so far gone that he couldn't ever admit this is all a scam and I made it all up and it's just a cult. Ha ha ha. Sorry. And so he's like, well, I'll just kill everybody. Because here's the other thing, right? In Jonestown. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that were like, no, they were forced to drink the Flavor Aid.
They were.
They had guns against their heads and said, if you don't drink it, I'll shoot you. So you're going to die regardless. So you choose. And they drank it because they were forced to.
Right.
These people.
This is scarier.
Were not forced that way. Right. Mm-hmm. They were psychologically forced over many, many years of this intense psychological cultic abuse.
Yes.
And everything was always explained away.
Oh, yeah.
As cults do.
Mm-hmm.
And rules were changed as cognitive dissonance caught up to what was happening. They changed rules.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I feel maybe this suicide was Applewhite's, he felt, his only way out of this massive scam and lie that he had created, because he can't say it. He'll go to prison. And he can't have any survivors left to talk about him and what a crazy thing it was. So he's got to take everybody out on the way out.
Right. Well, he's the leader. He's the second coming of Christ. And the fact that he believed that.
Right.
Like I said, his father disowning him was the beginning of his derail. And I really think it did something psychologically to him. And he just allowed it to keep festering. And because it always bothered him, I think he probably dealt with depression. I think he dealt with so many more demons than we will ever know. And Bonnie was the only one that could bring him out. And when she brought him out, she put all these other ridiculous thoughts in his head. And then by then he's thinking this is real. His reality was not you or my reality, but he made it their reality and he was successful at it. And it's insanity.
It's just, the more I read about it now as an adult who understands cult and cultic control and coercive control and things like this, it is even more heartbreaking than it was when I was 16.
Yeah. Stephen Hassan's bite model is very strong in this one.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. You can go right down it and be like, boom, 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 boom. I mean, he was obsessed with their sexuality. He was obsessed with their ability to perform sexual acts. He castrated people. He turned them into eunuchs so that they could not have sex and be celibate. That's extreme.
Well, his father thought it was evil and terrible that he was gay. So I've got to castrate myself. I can't keep these feelings in my head. I can't do that. I can't feel sexual towards someone else. It's not, it's sinful. So, and you guys need to do the same thing I'm doing.
It's just wild. And I'm so
happy. That's why they're calling it murder.
That we live in a society that is growing and understanding and evolving and is so much more compassionate.
I hope.
Than the generations that came before.
Yeah.
And hopefully there's a lot of us, again, I know you and I both are very awoken in this realm, that we're waking up to these realities and seeing these red flags, and we are ending these stigmas and these generational curses with our generation.
Yes.
That you're not becoming the mother who leaves.
Right. And, you know, my mom, to a point, she left us too sometimes. Not like that, but I think a lot of Gen X kids were done this way, but I mean, she would just kind of leave. And my dad at the time, they weren't divorced yet. He would just pick up the pieces until she got her crap together and all the things. But it wasn't all the time, but it was enough for me to go, mommy, don't leave. And I'd be holding her leg and she'd be dragging me with her. I mean, I was little, you know, so, and that's a horrible picture already, but you and I spreading the awareness of this, because I spread the awareness of all kinds of things, but that's why you have your podcast. You're spreading awareness about cults, whether it's corporate or this kind of cult. I'm spreading awareness with my podcast, with all kinds of different things too. Sex trafficking, that's another kind of cult.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. So it's unbelievable. It's jaw dropping and it's heartbreaking.
You know, it's hard for me because on one side, I want to be compassionate and understand that these people are victims. And on the other side, I'm fascinated with the psychological aspect of it. So I'm always on this, like, is this too much teeter-totter? Like, should I maybe not be smiling right now? Because it's a fascination kind of thing. But it's wild to me. There's so many intersections in so many things that I talk about where I'm like, oh yeah, that happens in MLM too. And again, we're realizing that all of these groups are just high demand, coercive control groups.
Absolutely.
That, you know, they know what they're doing. Whether it's in 1997 or it's in the early 70s or it's now.
Right.
The techniques for these things have not changed.
No.
Other than becoming more advanced and more stealth, where we don't even realize that we're indoctrinating ourselves into so many different groups like this, whether they're one-on-one relationships or big communities or whatever it is. Like, we don't even see it happening.
Sound so wonderful though. They make it sound so great. And just like he looked so innocent and lovely and everybody thought, oh, he's so happy and everybody's so happy and I'm not happy. So maybe I should join this group. And it's the same with your MLM stuff. It's like everybody's love bombing me and telling me all these wonderful things. And I feel like I'm a part of something. And it's the same thing, just different circumstances. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it resulted in 39 people dying or 38 people in a suicide.
I you said this is really the first time that you've publicly talked about it outside of your own podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So one, I'm sure you're just like, oh, thank God I got to talk about that. But like, how does this make you feel being able to tell this story now for the first time for real?
It's surreal. And you got to understand, for years, my mom was so incredibly embarrassed by this. She's the silent generation, but you know, she's brought up and they just didn't talk about anything, right? She would sweep it under the rug. We don't talk about this. It's embarrassing. Yes, it's part of our family, but hey, we didn't know them very well. We're distant from it, blah, blah, blah. But it did affect her and it did affect me. Not like, obviously not like my cousin, but it did affect her. And she was approached and she lost her mom and her sister, two sisters, for a little while in the cult. She was still a young mom at the time. She couldn't have communication with them. I don't know if she even really tried, but that was a situation where she could not have any communication. And that must have affected her. And then when she said, do not talk about this. Now, my mom's been gone 5 years. So when I talked to Cindy, I said, she just texted me one day. She goes, you know, it's 25 years today or whatever. It was last March. She texted me and I said, oh my gosh, has it been 25 years? Yeah, 97. I had a child in 97. Yeah, he'll be 25 this September. Okay. And she said, gosh, they're starting to call me again. And she goes, I thought they wouldn't know where I am. And I said, well, listen, you know, if you ever want to talk about it. And she goes, I'm not going to talk. I said, do if you ever want to talk about it on my podcast? And she was like, I'll think about it. And it took me, I finally interviewed her 2 months later. Took her a little while, but I interviewed her and it's heartbreaking, but it's so insightful. And it really gets, we talk about Marshall and Bonnie and all the things, but we talk about how it affected her and how it affected her brother and her dad and what she went through and what she remembered and the bizarre crap that happened with my grandmother, who was so eccentric, but she was funny and you didn't want to like her, but she was weird. And it was just the weirdest thing. And you don't know her very well. And she's just, and you understand why the other sisters may have gone off the deep end because they didn't have a stable life. They just didn't.
Right. I mean, even that goes to show, because I have also talked to the children of like mega huns, you know, the now adult children, and to talk about that and to see like what they went through as children and how that has affected them now as adults.
Yeah.
These are like, there are side effects to everything that we don't even know about that affect every part of our life. Being the niece of a member that was part of a mass suicide, like in a cult.
Still
like,
the biggest one. Yeah.
That's going to affect you.
Yeah.
Even if you are not in it, like it's still your aunt and your grandmother and your family.
Right.
And it is still that Bruno you don't talk about.
No, my mother was terribly embarrassed by it. And now I'm not embarrassed because here's my thing. Just like we said, we're spreading awareness, but also I think it needs to be talked about in the way of we've got to be very, very careful, guys. We have to be very, very careful in this day and age because things are happening. I get on TikTok and I follow astrologers and stuff because I interview those kinds of people. And some of them are just awesome. And some are going, oh my gosh, there's going to be this happening. There's going to, y'all be careful. And you're just like, okay, wait a minute. Don't spread fear. Okay. Don't be doing that. I'm not saying they all do it, but there's still enough of those people out there that people will go, oh my gosh, let's go. Let's just start a compound. We'll all grow things together. And then we'll all just dress the same because it's cheaper. And then all of a sudden they're in a cult. Because we all have the same mind feel of the world's going crazy and we can save money doing it this way. And we can all, hey, he knows how to farm and she knows how to do that. Oh, she's a good baker. Oh, if the power goes out, we can handle this without the power, but we can get some solar panels and he's good with IT. And they've got a nice little, you know, little compound and it's David Koresh all over again. And that's what we have to be very careful of. And there's no way to get around it. That's going to happen. And I'm afraid from what I watched actually with Diane Sawyer, and it's been months ago that they aired this. They were talking to some experts in cult activity, and like one was from Harvard, one was from some other place, several of them. And they said in today's society, they are introduced to so many new cults out there. It's mind blowing.
Every time we do an episode like this, or I talk about something like this on social, there are so many comments that are like, will you do this cult next?
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't even know. Like, it's so much. There's so many.
Yeah, cults I didn't even hear about. She goes, cults we didn't even know about. Oh, yeah. It's
wild. And so, yeah, you know, I love being able to talk to cult survivors or, you know, people that are in the cult survivor area
about
this stuff, because there's a lot of people listening that were not alive in 1997 and maybe for the first time in their entire life, they just heard about Heaven's Gate and they're like, wait, what happened?
What are you talking about? Yeah. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. And so being able to have a little bit more of an inside perspective and to sort of break it down where it's not so scientific as like, this is what happened, because I think maybe people see similarities in things that they're in where they're like, this is kind of similar to something that I've been looking into. Oh, the red flags are the same. It's all the same. And the more we can educate you to see them coming, the more you can swerve and miss them as they come toward you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I just, you know, just be careful out there. And, you know, it's like anything else, you know, people say, be careful at Walmart, be careful at Target. And there's people following you and, you know, oh, sex traffic. I mean, there's evil in this world. And if you just take care of yourself, and I say that, but it's easy to go wrong. But I'm just saying there are things you can do. I'm sure there are things that you can do. I'm not an expert in cult activity. I'm not an expert, you know, like from Harvard, but I do know if you have a strong foundation of friends and family, if they ever say, you know, leave your family, we want your money, all those things, please take a second look. You know, we all have free will. You do you. But if they're saying, no, your family needs to be gone, you need to leave your kids, or you need to leave your husband, or you need to give us your money, or whatever it is, it's a big red flag. I mean, absolutely. And I preach it to the choir. I mean, obviously, you know what I mean? You know,
yes. But there are people I was told one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and who knew? Who would have known that you would have been in some kind of corporate cult? So, and these people that were in Heaven's Gate, some of them were freaking brilliant. So it doesn't matter if you're not a high school graduate or you're a scholar at Yale. It doesn't matter. They focus on desperateness and whatever else, you know, want to belong, somebody to accept them. That maybe they're a different kind of person. Maybe they're struggling with their sexuality. Maybe they're struggling with whatever it is, you know, fitting in, just being maybe, you know, some people could be just on a spectrum and don't understand that and all the things.
It's important to talk about. And I'm going to have you come back and tell your MLM horror stories too, because I know you have them. Thank you so much, Leslie, for coming on the show and sharing your Heaven's Gate experience. I hope everybody learned something new today.
I hope they do too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast and my advocacy at The Real Roberta Blevins. You can find all of the links to the social accounts in our show notes. And if you just listened to that incredible story and you thought, oh my God, I have a story just like that that needs to be told, hit me up, therealrobertablevins@gmail.com. I would love to have you on the show to share your story and start your journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Huns.